Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
The FIA World Endurance Championship on RS1.
On RS1.
Part of the Radio Show Limited Network.
And Shea Adam is over in the paddock towards the Ullman Strait, which is where the WEC have tended to be the last couple of years. And the moment I mentioned the words WE and C, or the letters WE and C, Shea Adam, the sun came out for the first time today. Good morning.
Good morning. It's as if you beckoned it from behind the clouds. It started off this morning with a little bit of rain, but now clearly somebody upstairs is a race fan and excited to get this first official practice session of the WEC season underway. I've come all the way down to the pit out end of things because this is Ferrari World, and the new 499P is about to make its official session debut. I'm very excited by this car, I have to say, John. After seeing the renderings, seeing it in person is even better. But let's not take it from me. Let's take it from a driver who's got quite a bit of experience around here. Hello, Miguel Molina. Welcome back to Sebring. You've raced this place many times in a GT car. What's it like in a prototype?
Yeah, it's completely different. I think is a lot of expectation for this season, especially with the new project of Ferrari. So we will see. It's a different world. We need to learn a lot of things. The car is really nice looking as well. So driving here in Sebring is also very special.
Ferrari has such a special history at Sebring. It's a big honor to be chosen to drive this car. How much does that mean to you particularly?
Yeah, for sure. This is amazing. I mean, I think it's in the I am in the top of my career now with this project. I think it's very an honor for all of us to drive this car here, especially starting here in Sebring. So, like I said, I think we have a lot of things to learn, but I think we are ready to start.
Good luck today and this week.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shea. Shea Adam will be down in that paddock for us for the whole of the session. And, of course, we'll be bringing you every single session live. A cracking entry. And what a lovely weekend we had here just past with the prologue. Got the opportunity to wander around, speak to a lot of people. If you haven't heard our prologue programs, go to RadioLeMond.com. They're all available for download. We have in the hypercar class the biggest field of hypercars we've ever had, and in terms of top class racing, the biggest field we've had from some time. I think we have 11 cars here. That'll increase to 16 by the time we get to the 100th running of Le Mans. Between now and then, we've got 1,000 miles or 8 hours here. Then we're off to Portimao and then to Spa before the middle of the season at Le Mans. And then we're finally, our final race in Europe is Monza before the flyaways start for this season. Let's bring Shea back into this. It is no small feat, Shea, to basically build a paddock as well as a pit lane on the far side of the circuit here. We've gone back to the pit lane entrance that we had last year. There
yes.
was an experiment at the prologue of bringing them in slightly earlier so that the drivers could get their speed down before the speed line. But that didn't quite work the way it was meant to. I'll leave it at that. But the WEC, along with IMSA and Sebring, have put it back to the way it was last year.
And a lot of drivers very relieved over that, John. I know that there was a big incident at the end of, what was it, the fourth test session that they had here on Sunday, or as it was across the weekend. So a lot of repair work needing to go on to several cars, four of the cars, missing out on the photo, the annual photo that takes place to kick off the season. So that did come into play. But one of the cars that was slightly off the pace was the Vanwall. I just walked down to this pit box by Collis, still adorning the fire suits of all the mechanics. And the car, which has rolled out, there is a lengthy queue now waiting for the red light at the pit exit to go off, and then they will be able to go out on track. But John, you were here at the prologue. Did that car ever get further up on pace, or was it always slightly off?
The Bike Collis car and the Glickenhaus were both... It's a bit complicated, to be honest, but you've got to remember that the Bicolis car... We've got cars out on track, by the way, so your opportunity, if you're trackside or listening on 100.9, to see and hear the cars for the first time. Effectively, there are three different types of cars in terms of the regulations and the philosophies within that LMH class. You have the Toyota, for example, that is a four-wheel drive, hybrid-driven car. But the Glickenhaus and the Bicolis entered machine are two-wheel drive non-hybrids. The hypercars from Toyota, Ferrari and Peugeot, as I said, drive the front wheels with their hybrid. And then the LMDHs, what we call GTP here in the States, they've got a hybrid, but that only drives the back wheels. So that there are some subtle but important differences, Shay, as to how these cars make their performances and around the track. And the Jacques Villeneuve, by the way, out in the Colin Collis machine, the 680. That's the number four car. I think it's fair to say that the two non-hybrid hypercars in the collar-centred car and the Glickenhaus were a tiny bit behind on pace. But looking at the lap times, and it's always difficult, isn't it, Shay, to look at lap times in isolation because you don't know, particularly in free testing, what programs people are doing.
No, and it is fair to remember that, in effect, they were built to a different rule set.
Correct.
Than the cars at the head of the grid with a very different budget. So that is valid, John. I hadn't taken that into consideration before. Would you like to hear from a Peugeot driver?
Oh, I'd like to hear from any drivers you want. I never managed to catch up with any of the Peugeot drivers at the weekend.
Well, don't put it open to me for anybody that I want, but definitely want to speak to Mikkel Jensen. Mikkel, welcome back to Sebring, a place that you've won at twice now, but now top category of car, you are in the Peugeot. That's a dream come true, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a dream driving in the top class of WEC. Le Mans coming close very quick. So yeah, it's great to start the season here. We did a few races last year, but now getting ready for Le Mans. And busy weekend for me, also running in the IMSA.
And you're an IMSA champion, so racing in North America, that's got to be something extra special as well.
Yeah, there's some pressure this year, new team. Racing against the champion team from last year where I was. So, it's a busy weekend as well. New team here, new team in IMSA for this season. So, a lot to do, yeah.
What's the expectation from this weekend? It is the beginning of a championship for you guys, after all.
I think we are still struggling a little bit. We need to find some more pace. Just trying to get as many laps as possible. To have everything run clean, gather some data. We lack some laps in the prologue because of a crash, because of an issue with the car. So, I just hope we have a trouble-free practice session so we're ready for the race.
But as a two-time Sebring 12-hour winner, what can you bring to the team as far as track knowledge is concerned?
I think I can bring something. You know, the bumps are a big concern here. You always find a different line through. I think you learn on this track every year, where other tracks is like 10 laps and then you're into it. Jeff's first time here, and me and Paul have been helping him a lot to give him some tips before getting out on track to save some track time, yeah.
Good luck this week.
Thank you.
Great to hear the different noises going past here over there on the Ullman Strait. The big pops and bangs that you'll hear, they're generally speaking the LMP2 cars, and in particular the two United Autosports machines seem to have, going into turn one in particular, the 22 of Phil Hansen, who's at the wheel at the moment, and the team car, the 23 of Ollie Jarvis, who's in that one. It's almost like they've got a machine gun fire as they lift off and they pop down.
Appropriate for Sebring, John.
Yes, indeed. B17 base.
Exactly.
Being rededicated tonight at 6 o'clock as Hendrick Field, which is very poignant. As I think many of you know, it's named after a Floridian airman who was a B-17 pilot who came across to the UK during the Second World War to train RAF pilots on the 17C, which was the RAF version of that, and tragically in his first week in the UK was killed in a training accident out of Polbrook Airfield, which is about 3 miles from my house. So this place always has great poignancy for me, and a reminder to all of us of the sacrifices that are given by those that serve and protect in our name. And that rededication ceremony is this evening at 6 o'clock. If you're here on the grounds, might be something for you to keep an eye on. Just a reminder, you're listening to RS1, part of the Radio Show Limited network of channels. This is the first free practice session of the FIA WEC 1,000 miles of Sebring. We've yet to get to the 1,000 miles, so the 8 hours will probably come up first.
Wasn't last year 6 hours?
Yes, well, that was Mother Nature yes. Got involved in that one. Toyota Gazoo Racing, who were quickest over the weekend of Prologue, are again, it is Seb Buemi with a time, and as I say that, he's just improved again, and I'll give you the time. It is a 1:48.8 against a 1:49.7 from his teammate, and Earl Bamber slips into second actually between them. So that 1:49.7 is for Chip Ganassi's Cadillac Racing, Cadillac V-Series .R. I think they'll probably just end up calling it a V-Series. Earl was quickest in one of the sessions on Saturday, from memory. Yes, it was the afternoon session on Saturday that Earl was quickest in. Team WRT, Robert Kubica in the Orica, is the best of the LMP2s at the moment in fourth overall. In GTE Am, it's Project 1AO. Now, this is the fabulous Porsche 911 RSR 19. The last time you will get to see these cars in competition in the States. The GTEs, what we used to call GTLM here, are on their run out. Only the AM category cars this year. Matteo Caroli is best in that car. They were not in the best of place in that car in the early part of the weekend. But Gunnar Jeanette, Matteo Caroli and their Project 1AO team worked really hard and transformed that car, particularly through turn one. I mean, it was visual, Shea, the difference between that car in the early part of the week and afterwards. Tomino Rufucci for D-Station Racing is in second in the 777 Aston Martin and Proton competition. Another Porsche, Harry Tinknell, in the 88 is third. Three categories of racing here as Robert Kubica improves into fourth position. And as I say that, Antonio Fuoco has just gone back into fourth in the Ferrari EF Corsa Hypercar, the 499P. Do you know why it's called the 499P, Shane?
I do not.
Well, I don't know whether this is official or not.
Ooh, Ferrari rumour. Get Nick Damon ready.
But it's a V6, and I think that each cylinder is 499cc's.
Ooh, I like that theory.
If you know better...
I will ask Jeff Grosbard what the official naming is. So, Jeff, if you're at the track, please shoot me a text. If not, then we will get to the bottom of that. But another car that, and forgive me because I wasn't here for the prologue, didn't the Alpines have some issue over the course of the prologue?
Alpines now running in LMP2,
yes.
Of course. We should mention
yes,
that.
Yes, because they won the race overall last year, which is worth mentioning as well.
Correct.
But didn't exactly they have some issues with being able to move in a straight line at a good rate of pace over the course of the prologue?
They were not the quickest in a straight line. That is fair to say.
Because just coming down by the WEC pit lane, i.e. the run from turn 16 to 17, about 2 minutes ago, one of them was very slow coming by. The crew, I'm actually standing at their pit box, not ready to receive the car that time around. A second one just went by. Now, there are two of them, the 35 and the 36, and it was being caught by some GT cars, so maybe they're just working in some new parts. I'm not going to say anything negative about them because there is zero panic down here for any of the mechanics.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that the LMP2s, remember, have been slowed down in WEC. Talking again to P2 and GTE drivers, the GTEs in some parts of the track are slightly quicker. And even in the braking areas, one or two GTE drivers getting caught out with P2s coming past them, pulling in front of them and then braking for, say, turn one. And at least a couple of GTE drivers saying, I really was very close to running into the back of them. Also, the hypercars make their speed very differently as well nowadays. They're much heavier and therefore they're very quick out the corners. The Toyota isn't allowed to deploy its hybrid on the front wheels until 190 kilometres an hour, which means not very often here unless you're in a straight line. But they do accelerate very quickly out the corners, but they've run out of pace as well. And again, that's quite bizarre for the GTE and the LMP2 drivers, who think, oh, hello, here's a hypercar. I'll let him go past. Here he comes. Now he's just sitting there. Why is he just sitting there? Well, that's just the way it is. So the stratification, as the ACO call it, which is kind of the balance of performance between the classes rather than within the classes, is really important. It's not just about the lap times, but, Shears, you well know, it's about how the cars behave on the racetrack during racing situations.
Yeah, and the dependability, particularly for the gentleman drivers. Is it going to be the same time after time after time? Or as the tires burn off, is it going to get worse and worse? Which, again, is something you need for drivers who don't have all the experience like these pros do. I'm eyeing a driver right now, trying to see if maybe I can get him to come out, because you were talking about the AO Racing Porsche and how their development was over the course of the prologue. So let's see if maybe I can convince Gunnar to come and have a quick chat. Hello, my friend. John was singing your praises, saying how much your car looked to improve over the course of the prologue. Were you and PJ able to actually feel that?
Yeah, a massive amount. Huge testament to the Project One AO guys. And where we started at the beginning of the weekend, every session we made improvements. Obviously, at Sebring, you're always going to be chasing the track a little bit. And the conditions that we have right now are very different to the prologue and will probably be different again for the race. But it's been great driving the RSR. Hopefully we can continue the trajectory.
You guys found a lot of success with this car in the last race of the WEC last year. How similar is it rolling off onto Sebring to the car that you left in the Middle East?
It's extremely different. Sebring is a very unique place to begin with. Bahrain is very, very different in terms of mostly sort of track surface. It's super, super high degradation and very low grip. Sebring, you have a very large mixture of track surfaces. The two compounds that Michelin came with for the very nice confidential tires that we're still able to run have been awesome. So it's just, picking which one is the correct one for the temperature and track conditions.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the new livery for the AO Racing entry over in IMSA for the GTD. How different do you expect this weekend to be, though, bouncing back and forth between the GT3R and the RSR19?
Yeah, so we did the IMSA test with the GT3R, or as we're calling it now, the GT3RAR. And then obviously doing the prologue and part of the big field difference in hopping in the RSR, especially in that first session with how it was handling, was a massive change between the two cars. So at the end of that first session, PJ and I were looking at each other going, this might be a bigger challenge than we expected. But through the prologue, we've, like I said, improved the car. I think, from a handling perspective, they're probably going to be pretty similar. I mean, as similar as you can get between a rear-engine car and a mid-engine car. But the biggest difference is going to be really tires. So with the GT3R, we have to run the Michelin customer tire. And over here, we have the confidentials. And we have two options of confidentials. So, power, weight, aero is a bit different, but the biggest thing is the tire. We won't really know until we hop in the GT3R for the first time. All of the, our engineer, Charles Ham, over on the IMSA side of things, was one of the engineers for the factory RSR program here in the States on the core side of things. So he's very familiar with this car. So at least when we're talking about balance and that kind of stuff and comparing the two, he knows where we're coming from.
Yeah, that's a huge asset to have on your side. And I'll ask you that question again Saturday when you're done driving the RSR. But as far as this is concerned, this is a championship effort for you and PJ. So you can't exactly phone it in this week. You're getting ready for the 24 Hours of Le Mans as well. How much does that play into your mentality?
Yeah, no, it's, you know, I still have to pinch myself that I'm even able to be in this situation with PJ and that we are doing the double and running GTM in the last season of the RSR. You know, there are going to be a couple of clashes that we're going to have to figure out which ones we prioritize, but we're not going to do that until after the Sebring weekend. But like you did say, you know, this is all prep for PJ's first 24 hours of Le Mans and the 100 year of Le Mans. So yeah, I mean, we have to treat both of these on an equal level because they absolutely are.
Well, Gunnar, your crew's getting ready to come in. PJ's going to get in the car. I'll let you give him some words of wisdom. Always great chatting with you.
Yeah, thanks, Shay.
Shay Adam over at the WEC paddock area listening to RS1, part of the Radio Show Network of channels from our global broadcast booth. Swapping backwards and forwards between RS1 and RS2 this weekend. Some changes in the times. We'll get back to Shay in a moment with some more interviews. James Calado has taken Ferrari and the number 51 AF Corsa 499P to the top with a 147.935. That's sort of, yeah, I think that's where I thought we would have been in the prologue. I thought people were holding back by about a second and a half or 2 seconds. Said so. And we're starting to get quicker times than we saw in the prologue, or down to the times, rather, in the prologue. That is a very good time indeed. For a Ferrari that looks extremely unfussed and unperturbed around the track, it is desperately understated in terms of its body language out on the circuit, particularly through turn one. Achingly pretty in the paddock itself with a very complex under tray at the back of the car. And by now, nearly 0.4 seconds, Calado ahead of Sebastian Buemi in this first free practice session for the Toyota GR010 hybrid. Some detailed changes, evolutions on the GR010, bigger air box on top, and some aero devices to manage the air over the top of the cockpit. One or two bits and pieces around the car as well. I dare say there's been some changes under the skin as well for that car. Cadillac V-Series R in the shape of Earl Bamber has just pitted from third position. He's half a second away from that Ferrari time. 0.8 away, the Porsche Penske Motorsport Lawrence Vanto Porsche 963. That's the number 6 car. Then the second of the Ferraris, Nicholas Nielsen for Ferrari number 50. 0.9 seconds away. And just on a second away, Dane Cameron, the second of the Porsches, the number 5 Penske, the Porsche Penske Motorsport machine. So Ferrari, Toyota, Cadillac, Porsche, Ferrari, Porsche, and then Toyota. Mike Conway just pitting from 7th in the number 7. He's 1.1 seconds away from the top time. And then the two Peugeot 9X8s, the Total Energies machines, 94 from 93, Loic Duval and Jean-Eric Vergne. Got to see the underside of the 94 after an incident, and that car had to come back on the flatbed. Amazing about amount of design work underneath that car. No rear wing on that car, of course. They can get that car into the aerodynamic window that the rules prescribe without a rear wing. Looks a bit weird in some respects on the track. I'm still sort of getting used to it, if I'm honest. But my goodness, when you saw underneath the scalloping work around the sill areas at the edges of the floor, quite extraordinary what Peugeot have done with that machine. In LMP2, it's Prema from WRT, from Prema from Jota, from WRT, from two Uniteds. Those are the mega teams, aren't they? And they are separated by virtually nothing. It's the 63 Mirko Bortolotti Prema just coming into the pits that leads from Robin Freinsch in Team WRT's 31 car. then Andrea Caldarelli for Premers number 9. They're all in the pits. Still running around, David Hennemar Hansen in the 28. That's the season-long LMP2 Jota. Their second car is effectively going to do a very clever magic trick and turn into a Porsche at some stage in the later part of the season. We're hoping to see that from Spa onwards. That's what the team is telling us. Rui Andrade in fifth for the 41 team WRT. Then the two Uniteds, 23 from 22, Tom Blomqvist and Frederic Lubin. Then the two Alpines getting ready for their tilt back at the top class. Memo Rojas just going out, and Mathieu Vaxvier in the 35 and 36. And inter-Europol competition, Jakub Smirkovski makes up the top 10 in P2. In GT Am, it's EF Corsa and Frankie Castellacci in the 488 Evo. By about, nothing at all, half a tenth from Nicky Katzberg in the Corvette number 33. That's a privately entered Corvette. It's the Ben Keating car, and that is still the full-fat GTE AM car. Proton Competition is third with Harry Tinknell in the number 88. Richard in the number 88 Porsche, excuse me. EF Corsa in fourth for Alyssa DePauw in the 488 number 21. D-Station's 777 Aston Martin is in fifth in GTM. Tomonobu Fuji put that time in. And Project 1-8-0, having led the class a wee while ago, is at the moment in sixth with PJ Hyatt at the wheel of their Porsche. Let's get back to Shea Adam over at the WEC paddock area. Right, Shea, what have you seen up close that's caught your eye? Have you seen that new Ferrari hypercar yet?
Yes, and I do love it. I love it very much, I have to say. There's a lot of setup changes going on right now, John. There's very few cars running out on the track. At least there were a couple of moments ago when it seemed like there was a solid 60-second break between cars coming by on the back straight. But now a lot of people have gone back out. The van wall is in for some setup changes. And other than that, the 21 Ferrari seems to be having quite a bit of work done. I saw a driver get out of the number 83 Ferrari, so that would be the Richard Mille car. Very frustrated, took his helmet off, and then immediately disappeared out the back of the garage area. So clearly going to have a debrief further away with other people who are not out here on the pit wall. But it's interesting because it's very calm right now. I think all the running that we got during the prologue made people, feel a bit secure in their cars and what they've got coming up for the 8-hour race on Friday. It's very by the book, I almost hate to say.
It's interesting that people are still making the changes, Shay.
A lot, too.
Given that they had four sessions over the weekend. Obviously, some people had better runs than others. Both Ferrari and Peugeot had damaged cars at various stages over the weekend. Dan Flies just tweeted in, alert, Peugeot seems to be on track running without the tail panel. Oh, no, never mind. I'm going to turn six now. He says, it does remind me of an English bulldog with a clipped tail. It does take a bit of getting used to, that Peugeot, but there's no doubt that when you see it at speed on the track, it's working. It really is. Hello to Steph, who is getting ready to start her vacation and head up here, listening in on RS1 at the moment. Wherever you are in the world, good to have your company. It's back in London, England. It is, coming on to 20 past 4 in the afternoon in Central Europe this Wednesday. In case you hadn't noticed, by the way, there's no midweek motorsport this week. This live track coverage is in lieu of midweek motorsport. We'll be back with the show next week when we'll be looking back over a very busy weekend. We've got the first round of the Nürburgring Langstrecke series, the VLN run series, this Saturday morning into the afternoon European time. It'll be Johnny Palmer and Snowy on that one, Peter Snowden on that for us. So a hugely busy weekend of sports car and endurance racing. Things seemingly settling down. Well, Bamba improved last time around to a 48-0. That puts him within a tenth and a half. Where have you got down to now, Shea? I heard something either going up or coming down off its jacks.
That's Prema for LMP2. One of their cars just having some setup changes done in the rear. Looked like a ride height adjustment, actually, for this car. But the interesting thing, John, touching on what Gunnar Jeanette told us, it's dangerous to chase the track here, especially being Sebring. As it is, weather aside, you're never going to get a good setup on your car for this track because of all the bumps, because every time you come out, they seemingly move. Yet, we are in conditions that are not like anything that they have seen during the entirety of the prologue. It's much cooler out. I think it's probably about 60 degrees Fahrenheit in the air at this point, it's fair to say. It's not going to be like this for the race either. So this is a time when teams are trying to set up their cars to be good right now, when the conditions are never going to be like they are right now again for qualifying, the race, any of that. The closest thing I could think would be maybe qualifying. It's not going to be this cool for qualifying tomorrow evening.
22 Celsius if you want to do the adjustment to Fahrenheit at the moment. Oh. On the track, 17 in the air. So a little bit of a disparity there in terms of the heat in the air to the track. The track soaking up a little bit of solar energy and heating up quicker. Now, that will depend where the track temp is taken, in fairness, because there are, as you heard Gunnar Jeanette say, there are many different surfaces here.
Yes.
And you've got the almost pure white of the concrete on the start-finish line and the run down to 17. And you've got some dark and darker tarmac sections, asphalt sections as well. Just watching the Peugeot go by there.
Well, that's actually the car I was going to ask you about, John, because that would be the 93 Peugeot that you were watching go by.
Correct.
The 94 is not on track, is it?
No, it's in the pit at the moment. Shown in
yeah.
the pit.
No, it's not. It is back in its garage because their pit box is completely empty. So the Nico Mueller, Gustavo Menezes, and Loic Duval car was out earlier. They definitely did turn laps earlier.
It was Loic in the car earlier, and he brought it back in the pits. That's the car that had the accident over the weekend and needed a bit of a rebuild around the front end of that car. I think it's fair to say that Peugeot did not get the amount of laps in that they wanted. The 93 wasn't running cleanly at times. Paul de Rester is out in that car at the moment, and his best lap in that car is a 49.407, so a little bit off the pace for the French team. It's only a second and a half, though. We're not talking miles away, and still three quarters of a second quicker than the best of the LMP2 cars. So again, there's that difference between the categories. I think, you know, Peugeot were very brave last year. They had an extremely truncated testing program for that car, and in fact they were, I remember doing the Fuji race last year, and it was almost as if, no, it was like they were still testing systems through that 6-hour race. And the feedback, because I could hear the full radio coming in from the team cars, the radio messages were almost as if it was an extended test session as much as it was a race. And they're still, for me, the team that's playing catch-up. They've got a lot of work to do. They want to be competitive right through the season. And they're getting there. In terms of the outright pace, they're close. I just think they need to get that reliability and serviceability of the car sorted out.
Well, I found the 94.
Right.
They are currently servicing it. It is an... Ooh, there are gloves being worn by a mechanic who is elbow deep into the left rear of the engine. So the complete back of the car, and gloves tell me that he's dealing with some kind of fluid.
Or heat.
Or heat. No. These are latex gloves.
Ah, well, that means he's insulating himself from the hybrid.
Yep.
So this might be an electrical storage issue or a hybrid issue.
But there are a lot of mechanics working around there without the gloves.
Okay.
So they're more like doctor's office gloves than anything else, as far as latex gloves are concerned, instead of heavy-duty dishwashing gloves, if that puts it into context. But three, four mechanics are on the left rear of the Peugeot in the engine, as I said. And that car, they are all still wearing their fireproofs. They are still getting ready to come back out. So when it is ready to come back out, I'm sure we will see the 94 back out on the track. didn't have to go too far to find it either, John.
No, just true enough. It's
darted out of the pit lane, turned left, and it was the first car.
Yeah, it's amazing what they've done up there to build that little village, isn't it?
It really is.
Really good. Cadillac Racing in second. It's Ferrari, Cadillac, Toyota, Ferrari, Porsche, Penske Motorsport. Two different cars from what we saw racing at Daytona, of course. The Toyota Gazoo Racing number 7 is in 7th, and then the two Peugeots. Glickenhaus, the best of the non-hybrid hypercars, sits in 20th position at the moment, some 3.5 seconds off the pace. And the Bicolis run number 4 car, Jacques Villeneuve, out at the moment in that, 4.5 seconds off the pace in 23rd. Now that is quite a bit further away than they were in the prologue. Again, we don't know what part of their program they are running through at the moment. It's still EF Corsa and the 54 Ferrari from Corvette Racing's 33 Chevy Corvette and Proton and their Porsche in third in GTE AM, and an LMP2 Prema with the number 63 Orica Gibson from Team WRT, similar car, the number 31, and then the second of the Prema, number 9, that one is in third position. So no major changes there. I'll just keep an eye to see if we get any green on the timing screen. And we've just gone over halfway through this. 28 and a half minutes to go. You're listening to live, exclusive, free and uninterrupted coverage of the FIA World Endurance Championship from Sebring. It's Free Practice 1 on RS1, part of the Radio Show Limited network of channels. Shea Adam in the pits, John Hangoff here in our global broadcast centre. Good to have you company at RSL_studio for this part of our broadcast, which we'll be splitting with IMSA Radio, of course, when we get the IMSA categories back on track. But have no fear, everything will be covered for you. So Shea enjoying a pleasant-ish morning. Wind just starting to pick up a tiny bit, I would say, and now it's blowing directly across the start-finish straight from driver's left to driver's right. It was behind the cars going into turn one earlier on this morning. So that's going to be behind the cars going into turn 16, 14, 15, 16. Just not aerodynamically optimum, to be honest. So Shea Adam has worked her way down the pit and paddock and bumped into Alex Lynn. I hope not literally, Shea.
Well, I can. I mean, if you want me to bump into him literally, I could. But
do they ever say, like, no, we're not interested in speaking to him?
Not with John, not with you, at least. Definitely not with you. But, Alex, this is an easy session for you. You're in shorts. First off, why are you in shorts? It's a little too chilly for that, but that's okay. Coming into this session, do you guys look at it and say, it's an hour, we'll give Earl half an hour and Rick the other half an hour, and then you'll get in later?
Pretty much that's it. I think we're going to give, like, every driver, like, the hour session pretty much. And then the next driver that goes in next gets, like, the last 10 minutes just to get a feel. Because it's only a 1 hour session in, because we had the prologue, so it's just better to focus on the driver.
Do you feel like you learned enough at the prologue?
I think at this track, we seem to know quite a lot anyway, because this car's done a lot of laps around here during its development. And then we had the IMSA team tested it 2 weeks ago, so we sort of feel like if there was any track we'd arrive at with a good knowledge, it was going to be this one.
Are there any significant differences between the IMSA specification and then the WEC specification of this exact car?
Yes, there is. We've got a small aero tweak just from our BOP. That's because of the two different wind tunnels that the FIA and IMSA used separately to set their own BOP window. Just came out with slightly different results. So, yeah, the wet car is a slightly different aero config than the IMSA team.
So that means that you can't transfer as much data back and forth between the Chip Ganassi team?
Correct. To be more specific, the wet car has more drag than the IMSA team.
Very interesting. All right, you're coming back into this race, a two-time winner now of the 12-hour. Do you feel a little bit more confident when you drive through the gate?
Yeah, no, I like being here. Like, I've had a good time every time I sort of come here. I love Sebring. To be honest, as an event, I'm always sad not to do the 12-hour when we do the WEC one. Would have been cool to do both. But no, I think we're right now in the WEC team. We've got a really good feeling. And we just want to try and get this one out of the way and bank some good points, good result, and then move into the European season.
This is a full championship effort. How much are you guys thinking about winning the first WEC championship for Cadillac?
We think about it a lot. I think as a driver crew, I've never been in a driver crew like this one where all three of us so determined to get results and to achieve good things. I think Earl and Richard are both very determined drivers with a lot of talent, so I think we can have a good year. But certainly with how we're operating, we're coming here to get results straight away.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you guys are the only trio where all three of you have won the 12 hours, so that's got to come into play as well, that you've got that little bit of track knowledge and maybe the extra ace up the sleeve of knowing how the race works for 12 hours should be easier for 8.
Yeah, I like the lineup we have in a sense that all three of us got good experience at big races and performing in big moments, and that I think comes into play when the pressure's on. You know, not only this one, but we're going to arrive at Le Mans. You know, I've managed to win it in class. I always won it overall. You know, so in that sense, it's good experience. You know, especially when the pressure really ramps up.
Are you more excited to get in the car later in the afternoon, knowing that that's relevant to race time running?
Yeah, I think it's important, especially the difference between an IMSA race here and a WEC race is everyone sets their car up in IMSA for the night, you know, for, you know, the money times in the last 4 hours. Whereas here, in the heat of the day, that's where the race is won and lost. When it's really slick, really slippery, super hot, that's where you'll make the difference from your competitors.
Great point. Thank you, Alex. It's always great to chat with you and hope that you get to work a little bit later.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Absolutely fascinating stuff there from Alex Lynn in that Cadillac. And I have to say, I hadn't realised there was slight differences between the Sauber, the Audi wind tunnel, I suppose we call it now, and the Windshear tunnel that's given them a slightly different aerodynamic balance. So they're a bit more draggy in WEC.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting.
And all because of different wind tunnels.
Yes.
I mean, it makes so much sense, but it's not something that we ever would have thought about.
No. And thank you to Alex for pointing that. There are one or two other detailed changes as well. At the moment, they're running at the same minimum weight. But I was talking to Laura Wontrop-Klauser, the head of GM Motorsport, and I think it was the second of our programmes, if you're listening back.
She's awesome.
Oh, she's brilliant. And an engineer by trade, now running the programme. And she was saying there's some quite important differences in the way that the scrutineering wiring looms are between the two different championships, which means it's not that easy to switch the cars back and forth. So if the unthinkable happened and one of the cars got destroyed this weekend, it wouldn't just be, oh, let's just roll out one of the IMSA spare cars, because, you know, or vice versa, because there's actually quite a lot to do. It's a matter of hours, not days, but even so, it would take quite a bit of work. An overnight session is what she said to me, to change them over from one spec to another. So there are a couple of different things that we can now report that are happening as far as those WEC LMDHs as to the IMSA GTPs. As we should rightly call them. So what have we got left in this session? 21 minutes to go. There was an improvement a few minutes ago for the number 7 Toyota. Now up into 6th position. It's Jose Maria Lopez, who's just taken over that car. But I think it was Mike Conway that did the time. This is splitting the two Porsche Penske Motorsport machines. That's the only major change recently in the top of the timing. Scott Huffaker, Team USA alumni, in with Kessel Racing in the Ferrari, the very brightly coloured 57 Ferrari for the whole season. He's improved that car up into 3rd position ahead of Ryan Hardwick in the Proton competition in 4th, and Simon Mann in the AF Corsa Ferrari in 5th, with Luis Perez Compank in 6th position, and still AF Corsa from Corvette Racing, by the way, in the top 2 places in GTEM. Weather's getting better, I reckon, Shane.
I was just going to say, John, I've had a setup change. I've added the sunglasses. It's gotten that sunny. And break in the clouds as they are moving. Well, they should be moving to the east in theory. That's the way that the weather was going this morning. But there are darker clouds to the west as well. So we might just be in a little pocket of happiness. You know, maybe maybe somebody upstairs is a fan of WEC, because it looks like the weather is going to be good for this entire session, and then maybe questionable afterward. Into the pit lane is coming the Hertz Jota mobile.
Right.
This car, which you said will magically transform into a Porsche
yes.
later on in the season, is about to have a driver change as well. So maybe we'll be able to get a chat with the man getting out of the car, who is which driver?
Let me see.
It's Oliver Rasmussen getting into the 28.
It was David Beckman.
You that.
David Beckman brought the car in. Now, look at that car, Shea.
Okay.
And tell me, what do you notice about that car?
The 28 machine. This is the one that is shared with David Hennemeyer Hansen, not Christian Fittipaldi. Wow, dollar in the jar. That's my first one for the weekend. Pietro Fittipaldi and Oliver Rasmussen. It's gold. It's not... It's not a very bright gold. It's a very subtle gold, and there's no Hertz livery on
right.
the 28.
Right, the 28 is just the Jota car.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay.
That's the one in for the full season.
The Hertz one is the 48.
Yes.
Yes, and there is no 38 for the first time ever. I heard you talking about that with Sam Hignett.
Yes, first time ever.
Yep.
There is no 38.
Aww.
So we have no Mighty 38. The Mighty, because that is the number that's been allocated to the Porsche 963.
Well, if it's going to magically transform into the 963, I think it should wear the number.
But I said that. That's exactly what I said off mic.
Yeah.
Hertz Team Jota have also managed to recruit Dieter Gass, former head of Audi's DTM program, and who looked after their full motorsport program for a while. Had a chat with him over the weekend, very excited. Already enjoying the differences between being part of a major manufacturer team and being part of a customer team. He said there's a lot to enjoy about the differences, and he looked very smiley. He's been around paddocks in motorsport for a very, very long time, knows which way is up. And before he took over the job, he would often deputise for Dr. Wolfgang Ulrich in his capacity as head of Audi Motorsport. I remember talking to Dieter at some length about DTM cars and whether they could be made into endurance cars some years ago. So we are 43 minutes in, or 17 and a half to go, and three of the 11 hypercars are in the pits.
Only three of them?
Yeah.
Wow.
Everybody else is still running. There's a change in time. Matteo Cresoni in the Porsche for Iron Lynx. Iron Lynx changing manufacturers in WEC this year. Of course, they've gone to
and
Lamborghini in their other championships where GT3s are allowed as a prelude to them being the Lamborghini hypercar team.
Well, they've changed in every series that they're running, because they've been a staple of Ferrari for so many years.
Yeah, and that comes down to Deborah Mayer, who is the driving force in every way, I mean that, behind Iron Lynx and Iron Dames. Also head of the FIA's Women in Motorsport Commission. A Ferrari fan, former Ferrari racer and collector. Probably still collects Ferraris.
Yeah, you're never a former Ferrari collector.
I was going to say, I'm sure she still has some. And this is a huge effort that they've put in. And running the Porsches, Rahel Fry was very complimentary about the Porsche in WEC. And watch out for that pink car. It's Matteo Cresoni who's just improved for the Iron Lynx. And improves again now, down to a 159.531. So these are GTE cars going just a couple of seconds a lap quicker, Shea Adam, than the deluxe Porsche Carrera Cup machines we were watching earlier this morning. That tells you how quick those Carrera Cup cars are.
It really does, and it tells you the pace that's in the track already as
yes,
well,
good
which
point.
Is a great thing to see that our WeatherTech drivers are going to be watching eagerly as well, since they don't get on track until, well, tomorrow, halfway through the morning. So for the WEC runners and riders, this is a bit of an advantage. I'm going to try and jump in here with David Hennemeyer Hansen. He's having a debrief with Pietro Fittipaldi, having gotten out of the 28 Jota machine, needing some fluids, because it is hard work out there behind the wheel of a prototype anytime you go around Sebring. And he is actually learning a lot from Pietro. Pietro, by the way, one of four drivers doing both races in the same kind of machinery for both races. So that's big. We've got 28 of them total, I believe, and Pietro driving Orica chassis in both races. So that's something we'll have to keep a head on as well as the week progresses. But for David, the focus is only on the WEC, and the focus is on a championship in the WEC once again. Let me see if I can interrupt him. Hey, David. Do you mind if I bother you really quickly?
No, not at all.
It was a very valuable debrief you were having with Pietro, so I didn't want to cut in on that.
Okay.
But Sebring is a place for you. In a prototype,
yes.
It just seems to work like magic. Twice you've been second here in the 12-hour, and then the win in 2019 in P2. Does it just feel like a roller coaster that you know where it's going?
This is my favorite track in the U.S., and it's not even close. I mean, for me, it's only Le Mans that places above this. But Sebring is just the most magical place. Just all the bumps, it's new every time. I've driven here maybe 12 races over my entire racing career. And every single time you arrive in turn 1 or turn 17, you're like, oh, this is new. This little bump hits the car in a novel way. It's just so much fun.
It's a bit magical when you get to experience that over and over again, because it reinvents your love of racing, doesn't it?
It really does. I mean, when I come here, I'm like, oh, I should race more in the U.S. It's just such a great track. And it's so unique. There's nothing else in the entire motorsport world that feels like Sebring. There are fast corners, everything, everywhere, but there's nothing that has the bumps and excitement of turn 17 and turn 1.
So what does it mean for the WEC season to start off here? Does that give you that extra confidence boost going forward, which then you take into your second favorite, Le Mans?
Yeah, hugely. I mean, it is just so nice to kick off a season at a track, you know, like the back of your hand. And not just know, but enjoy. I mean, this is really where you get started with the season. You often think like, wait, how much money did I just sign up to spend in the whole season? And then you come here and you do a couple of laps and you go like, oh, yeah, that's why.
It all makes sense. Now, you've signed up with the right team. You're with Jota, the mighty 28, as we're going to call it this weekend. Pietro and Oliver, how's it been working with them?
Oh, wonderful. I worked with Pietro all last year. Phenomenally fast driver. Oliver is a fellow countryman, a fellow Dane. I think we have a really nice lineup. I mean, the weak link, as always, is that we happen to have an amateur. That's me in the car, and we're competing against some lineups that don't quite have that. But, I mean, it's great. I think this is about as good as it's going to get for me. I mean, this is one of the absolute best team, if not the best team, if you look at the record at Le Mans and elsewhere. Wonderful driver lineup. And we kick off the Sebring race, my favorite race in the U.S. It's hard to get better than that.
You're hardly a weak link. You're a world champion and a Le Mans winner, so don't cut yourself short. Now, we come into Sebring, and the conditions are very different than they were at the prologue. How much are you guys staying calm and understanding that the race is going to be a lot more like testing than it is today?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I just went out, and I thought for sure there was oil in turn 16, but apparently it's just a headwind or a tailwind or something. So it is a bit different. It's a lot cooler. It'd be so much easier if we had to do this. I mean, I jumped out at the prologue after doing 40 laps in 88-degree weather, and I thought, like, wow, this is going to be a very hard physical challenge. This is nothing like that. I mean, these cars in particular, the new P2 cars, are just so much less physical than the old ones. I mean, we used to have 600 horsepower and far grippier tires. So at Sebring, it's really the heat soak. It's not so much that you wring your neck out or your muscles get sore, it's that you get heat soaked. And I think that challenge is going to be there on Friday, looking at the forecast.
Well, hey, good luck for it, and enjoy every lap. I know you'll be smiling.
Yes. All right. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I think he's running himself down there, Shea. I'm with you. Very, very tidy. A good little steerer, as our Australian colleagues would say. David NMR Hansen talking to Shea Adam down in the pit lane. And already, as they might say on Sex and the City, and just like that, we're inside the last 11 minutes of the racing, or at least of the free practice session, which has run green so far. It's still Ferrari from Cadillac, from Toyota, from Ferrari, from Porsche Penske Motorsport, from Toyota, from Porsche Penske Motorsport, from the two Peugeots, with the two non-hybrid hypercars slightly off the pace at the moment. 3.25 and 4.5 seconds off the ultimate pace. The top nine, by the way, separated by 1.5 seconds at the moment, from Ferrari number 51 to Peugeot number 93. If you're watching trackside, are you getting used to that Peugeot yet? Are you?
No. I've seen it once leaving the pit lane, and no. I thought it was missing rear end.
All weekend, every time it went past me, until literally I was wrapping up the third shore, and it went by, and I thought, oh yeah, there's the Peugeot. And that was the first time I didn't think to myself, oh, it's missing something. Improvement last time around for Ben Barker in the GR Racing. That's the black number 86 Porsche with the orange striping.
Welcome back to them. They missed this race last year.
That's right.
Yep. So yeah. They're, 3 years out from having run at Sebring. Last on the race in 2019.
And I think it was Alessio Piccariello. Yes, it was, who improved the iron links before that car came into the pit. That's another 159.3. 159.7 for Mikkel Pedersen for Dempsey Proton Racing in the 77. That's an improvement for him on the timing screen. Looks like Jose Maria Lopez might be putting a decent lap in for the number 7 Toyota Gazoo Racing GRO 10.
Huh, John, you said the 60 improved its time on the way in?
Either the last lap or it must have been the lap before.
Okay, because they are changing the subfloor on the nose of this car, which is interesting. Looking at the bumper, and the bumper has no apparent damage, so maybe it was an off-track excursion over the curves and something felt a little bit off, but the piece that they've taken off doesn't look broken, so interesting. Very random.
Shea Adam in the pits as we're inside 9 minutes now. Sun just behind a cloud again for a moment. Air temperature hovering around 17, 18 Celsius. That's 24 on the track. Don't forget, we'll have every session of the FIA World Endurance Championship, the WEC, on RS1 across this weekend, including qualifying and the race. And for the race, we'll be taking over WWRG 99.1 FM in addition to the track frequency of 100.9 FM. Big race on Friday noon with an absolute cutoff time at 8 p.m. or 1,000 miles, whichever comes quicker. I need to just do a little bit of calculation, but I think it will be the 8 hours rather than the laps completed for the 1,000 miles. Car's not quite quick enough, even with a full green race, I reckon, to do that time. Antonio Giovinazzi has jumped into the number 51 Ferrari and is circulating now. Gio, one of a number of drivers in the field with Formula One experience.
Ooh, that's a good trivia stat. I should add that up.
Yes.
I've got it written down, but I need to actually do the arithmetic on
all
that
right.
One.
Okay. Like that.
That's something we can do in between sessions.
Yeah. In all that time we've got.
Exactly.
Yeah. In all that time we don't have.
In the lunch break between, probably 2:15 and 2:50.
Oh, we've got that much time, have we?
I think so.
Oh, excellent. We will be adding Joe Bradley. He's en route at the moment. And he should be touching down in a couple of hours or so up in Orlando. So we'll be adding Joe Bradley to the pit lane team for tomorrow and the rest of the weekend.
I really hope it's the plane that's touching down and not Joe.
Well, that's a fair point.
Yep.
Point well made. They could just, if they have to get diverted south, they could just drop them off as they go past.
Well, there is an airport. We are on a former taxiway.
Yes.
So
I'm not sure it's quite big enough to take what Joe's on.
Well, they used to take the B24, the Super Fortresses.
Yes.
So after the B17s were the most popular planes that were used here at Hendricks Airfield. But, they have taken the B24s. I don't think they're quite the size of the airliner, as you're correct in saying. But, you know, a good landing is when you walk away. A great one is when you can use the plane again. And we're just asking for a good one.
Yes. Fair point. That point well made. If you didn't hear what I was mentioning about earlier on, the Hendricks Field is going to be rededicated this evening, and it is 6 o'clock, if memory serves, this evening, which is a really lovely thing to do. If you're not sure about the origins of this, I'll give you a brief version earlier on. Basically, Lieutenant Hendricks was an aviator who was born and brought up in Florida. I think Jacksonville was his home, and went over to the UK, having been based here with the B-17s, and unfortunately and rather tragically, in the course of a training flight at Polbrook Airfield in North Northamptonshire on the 17C, he was killed on the 28th of July 1941, just 3 days after he arrived there. And so that is why this place is named after him, First Lieutenant Laird Woodruff Hendricks. He was born in Ocala, actually. He did grow up in Jacksonville, Florida. Rededication service tonight at 6 o'clock if you're here on the grounds. Might be a nice thing to go to, just to honour not just Lieutenant Hendricks, but of course all of those who serve and protect us, particularly given what's going on in Ukraine at the moment. Think of how fortunate we are not to have to go through situations like that. So down to the last couple of minutes, 3 minutes in fact still on the clock, and an improvement last time around for Fred Makovecki in the number 5 Penske run Porsche. It's the Porsche Penske Motorsport machine. 149.0, 148.222 has Ryo Hirakawa improving in the his Toyota Gazoo Racing GRO10 hybrid. That's the number 8 car, now 3rd position. Ferrari, Cadillac, Toyota, Ferrari, Toyota, Porsche, Porsche, Peugeot, Peugeot in your top 9, still 1.4 seconds separating those cars. Are you able to notice the difference in the engine noise between the hypercars? As Ryo Hirakawa in the Toyota goes to the top with a 147.6. So that's a very decent time, nearly 3/10 quicker than anything else. Are you able to discern the differences as the cars are going by?
Not yet, but I haven't focused on that yet. That hasn't been something that I've done in this practice session. That's something more that I do in the course of the race. In this one, I've been more hunting victims. So it's been more of that as the priority. But I was going to say, John, the Porsche that you mentioned, that team name, what's that full team name?
Which one?
Porsche.
Porsche Penske Motorsport.
Yes, yes, that middle part right there. Penske.
Yeah.
Mr. Penske out here on the pit lane for the first practice session. As you would expect, nothing less. He's going to be here for all 4 days. But I was a little bit surprised to see the captain steering the ship from the first WEC practice session, and he was ecstatic that this is finally happening because he's been waiting a long time for the opportunity to race not only in IMSA but in the WEC, race in the top class, and have the opportunity to win both races overall in the same weekend. Kind of cool when the guy at the head of the program is still enthusiastic about it and still going out to the pit box, not sitting on top of the pit box. That's not how it works on this side of the track, but he is very much involved with every aspect of what's going on already for the first practice session.
RSL underscore studio if you want to get in touch with us when the WEC cars are out, and therefore we're doing our FIA coverage. B-17s, Flying Fortresses, yep, B-24s, Liberators, and the Super Fortress was the B-29, says Erwin. I'm not sure if you're here, Erwin, but I hope you are. If you're not and you're near, think about coming. It's going to be a great weekend. Loads of history here.
Yeah, as a history major and a World War II buff, particularly as it concerns Florida, this place is heaven.
Yeah.
Who is behind the wheel of the Corvette at the moment, John? Because Nick Katzberg is helmeted, ready for pit stop practice. Once the session is over, we'll be taking over. But I'm wondering...
It's brilliant. Ben Keating.
Ben Keating, awesome.
Fast,
he's going to be smiling ear to ear.
Fast Ben getting faster. Is there a better bronze driver in the world than Ben Keating in a GT or a prototype car? Is there?
Nope.
Is there a better driver for his age That, no disrespect to Ben. Bronze, silver, possibly even gold driver. I'm not sure. Particularly doing multiple programs. Checkered flag is out over the start finish line here. It's half a lap back to the pits, of course. No issues from anybody coming in and out of the pits that we have. I've been watching the static camera there, and everybody's done that fine here. Pit entry one, because I say that. And as the words come out of my mouth, Andre Lotterer is under investigation for crossing the pit entry white line whilst on the track.
Is but he in the six or the five?
He's in the six.
Okay, that car has already driven back behind the wall to go back to the garage tent area.
Okay.
So there will be no penalty to be served from that car. Well, not in this session, at least.
Well, yes, indeed. Quickest then, Ryo Hirakawa for Toyota GR010 Hybrid. We'll stand sheer down a little bit. There's so little time between the sessions that we have barely any time to turn around. So I'll give you a rundown before we wrap up here. Toyota number 8, Ryo Hirakawa, did the time. 1:47.649. EF Corsa's Antonio Giovinazzi, nearly got that completely the wrong way around, in second. And the second Ferrari improves on the last lap to the line, Miguel Molina, with a time of a 1:48.0, moves into third place. So Toyota, Ferrari 51, Ferrari 50, then Cadillac number 2. Richard Westbrook finished that session. Suggests that he'll be doing the whole of the next one by the last 10 minutes or so, if what Alex Lynn was telling us is followed through. Jose Maria Lopez has just come into the pits for Toyota number 7, which finishes in 5th. Then the two Porsche Penske Motorsport cars. Then the two Peugeot cars. 1.7 across the top 9 cars with that improvement at the end. The Glickenhaus did its best lap on its last lap, the 7:08. Now that is scored in a separate class on the timing screen as a just a hybrid, as a hypercar non-hybrid, but of course it's bunched with all the other hypercars. 3 seconds off the pace for that car, and the Collars number 4, 3.3 seconds. So those two closed up to each other, but didn't get any closer to the front of the field. In LMP2, it was Prema number 63 from Team WRT number 31, with about 2.5 tenths between them. Then the second of the Prema cars, the number 9. Then Jota, number 28. Then Team WRT, 28, by the way, is the full season Jota car. WRT's number 41. United Autosports number 23, Josh Pearson finishing off the session there, and that car in 6th. And in GTE, right at the end there, Michel Gatting nicked the top time. Just coming to the checkered flag in the number 85, the bright pink Porsche, ahead of the EF Corsa number 54 Ferrari and Ben Keating's Corvette, the 33, in third position. So Porsche, Ferrari, Corvette, your top three in Le Mans GTE Am. Thanks to Shea Adam down there in the pit lane. We'll have more from her with our continuing exclusive live, free and uninterrupted coverage live from Sebring. That was the first free practice of the FIA WEC and their 1,000 miles of Sebring race. We'll have that as well for you here on Friday. And it's all live here on RS1.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.